Members, we're going to get started. The committee will come to order. We're continuing our deliberation on House File 935, the DE5. We're working off the DE5 amendment. We've already amended it several times yesterday. We have eight written amendments that have been turned in, and I think there's also a verbal or oral amendment forthcoming. And so we'll start with Representative Slocum. I think you've got a author's amendment. Is that correct? Very well. Representative Slocum moves the A25 amendment. Pardon? Oh, the chair moves the A25 amendment. I was thinking the chair and Mr. Slocum. How about that? So Representative Slocum, the amendment's before us.
I'm sitting here looking at A20, so 1 second, please. Give us 25.
Is the 820 the previous amendment?
Perfect. Yes, I'd like to move the A25 amendment.
So, the chair moves the A25 amendment.
Oh.
And perhaps you can explain it.
Okay. Essentially, lines 1.4 through 1.3 down to 1.7 is just clarifying language. There's no substantial changes.
Okay.
Line 4, this was a request of the MBE, and part of it was the date was mixed up, so it again is just clarifying to align with the contract that the MBE has.
Okay.
Line 1.9 through 1.16 is again clarifying again. Then there were some errors in the language from 1.17 to the end of the document, and we corrected those. That's the fiscal for the authorizers. The payments received.
Well, these were some numerical errors that were in
just numerical errors, so it corrected that. And then in line 2.10, it is correcting the language. There was a word in that shouldn't have been in. So this is really just correcting language.
Very well. Members, so we have largely a technical corrections amendment. So I know instead of paying, for instance, instead of paying 0.012, it was meant to be 0.01. There's kind of a bit of a difference there. A bunch of little typographical and some other technical corrections. Discussion? All in favor? Rip, clear us out. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, we have he's not here. And maybe he's not here. Martin's here. So we wanted to do this one first. Pardon? No? You see? Representative Norton, you were number 5 on my list, but we have some members who aren't here to offer their amendments, so would you be, are you ready to offer your A19 amendment?
Well, I'm going to go ask a question about that one.
Well, we can hold off if you need to do that, I think.
If there's nobody else here.
Who's this? You don't know? Or this? Or this? Representative Norton, if you need a second, that's fine. I can jump over to another amendment. Representative Faust, you were last on my list. Did you rise to the top?
Sometimes it helps to show up early. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, it does.
I'm going to offer an oral amendment that is actually, I think, very simple. And I checked to make sure that it would be all right as an oral amendment. I think it will be. And this is on page 14. I move to reverse all the changes that were made from line 14.7 to 14.24. So we would reinstate lines what's crossed out in 14.8 through 14.11, and we would cross out everything, all the new language from 14.11 to 14.24.
Well, Representative Faust moves the following amendment. Could you, Ms. Faust, please? And members, is this a little unorthodox for us to do? I mean, this is sort of the weakness of doing oral amendments, but I want to make sure that we have decent leeway for members to put forth their ideas and consider them. At some point, obviously, the chair will probably need to make some technical calls about, better to have it written. So I'm just sort of forewarning you. But I think this is actually a simpler amendment than it sounds. Ms. Larson, if you can help us with that.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Faust, as I understand it, is moving to amend the DE-5 amendment as amended by the H0935A25 amendment that you just adopted, by further amending the amended document as follows. Page 14, lines 7 to 24 on that DE-5 document, reinstate the stricken language and delete the new language.
Very well. Members, do we understand the amendment? And this, Representative McFarland.
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, since this has to do with finances, would this be better to take up in Finance Committee and spend our time today on policy?
Representative McFarland, that would be my normal course of procedure. This is sort of one of those gray areas, I think, but we're not so much arguing or debating the numbers as much as we're debating with this amendment the form in which payment will be made to the this is to the authorizers, I believe, and so in my mind there's a policy decision here, but it certainly is a gray area. Representative Fowler, the chair is willing to entertain it at this point. Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I did have that thought myself, Representative McFarland, and so I'm glad that you'll take this because I'm not on the Finance Committee, so I wouldn't be able to do it there. The way I understand the current language is that charter schools or their authorizer can increase their fee by almost 45 times from what it currently is. Currently, it's after the first 3 years, it's $10 per student, and I believe that under the new language, it can get as high as $450. And I just think that's totally irresponsible. It's taking money out of the classroom, which I don't think is a good idea. And so there's just no way I could ever vote for this with the current language in there. And so I think we need to change it back to the way it was, because I just think this is totally irresponsible to do this.
Representative Slocum, and perhaps you can, you and your testifiers can tell us, for the committee's sake, the current way in which there is payment to authorizers and what the difference is between that and what's being proposed in your bill.
We are asking, Mr. Chair, and Representative, we are asking authorizers to step up to the plate and do a lot more with this bill. And as a result, they should have a higher fee. This fee structure has a minimum and a maximum fee, you'll notice, and that was put in for the charter organization so that there was no overpayment. And then this was also agreed upon between the charter organization and the sponsors. And I have the sponsor, one of my sponsors, to clarify some information for you.
Good morning. Can you state your name for the record? And
good morning. My name is Katie Teal. I'm the Director of Charter School Sponsorship for Volunteers of America. Sponsors and MAC have been in conversations for months to discuss the sponsor fee and what this would look like. A couple of things to note as to how this came about and the reason for the sponsor fee proposal in the bill. First of all, the OLA report recommends that the authority for sponsors be increased, and that this bill addresses that need. Also, in the language of the report, not as a specific recommendation, but as part of that recommendation, it notes that the sponsor fee will likely need to increase if authority increases for charter school authorizers. So consistent with the OLA report in the need to increase sponsor fees. A couple of things as background. Last year, sponsors received just $365,000 to oversee charter schools, and that's over 150 charter schools. So the fee that's currently in place in the law is substantially lower than need be if the authorizers are to increase their capacity and their authority and accountability for authorizers, which is the intent of this bill. A couple of things that authorizers do, high-quality authorizers and those authorizers that will be approved through this bill, is they attend board meetings, they review schools annually, they do site visits many times, multiple throughout the year to the school to oversee the school's financial and student performance, which is how, which is the requirements based in law, is to oversee the school's financial and student performance. The school, the authorizer must oversee the school's financials by reviewing monthly financials and by reviewing the audit from the school. The authorizer also, at the end of each contract period, must, at least at the end of each contract period, evaluate the charter school and give a full program evaluation on the progress of the school to make a determination as to whether or not to renew the charter school contract. Also, throughout the period, there might be a need for intervention, and sponsors or authorizers must intervene in intensive ways at times when there is a concern at a school, if there's any compliance issues or if the academic performance is not meeting the needs of the students and community. So the authorizer's role here is quite substantial, and this bill in requiring that the department approve authorizers is right in line with that, with increasing that accountability for sponsors. Currently, some sponsors for that role receive no more than $3,500 a year to oversee a school. And if you, for example, Volunteers of America, to speak to us, our actual revenue and expenditures, we received this last year about $30,000 to oversee 15 charter schools, and we spent almost $150,000. And so it's quite evident that the sponsor fee does not meet the needs of the authorizers. The charter school community is in agreement with this and sees that there is a need to increase authorizer fees to increase the capacity of authorizers and increase the high-quality charter schools in the state. One thing, too, to bring a note on a national level, the National Association of Charter School Authorizers recently did a study on sponsor or authorizer fees throughout the country. And in that report, it noted that on average, the authorizer fee structure falls between the range of 3 to 5% of the education revenue. We're asking for, after this is fully phased in, we are gradually increasing the fee so that it doesn't strike charter schools bluntly right away at the beginning. Once fully realized, we're asking for 1.5%, including minimums and maximums. So there won't be a large charter school, say of 500 students, once fully realized, would be paying about $20,000 in fees. a charter school that's around 100 students, which is really what most charter schools are, around 100 and 150 in terms of students, would pay about $7,000 in fees. And we feel that that's fully reasonable given the responsibilities and authorities for charter school sponsors.
Thank you, Ms. Teal. And for members who just arrived, Representative McFarland raised, I think, an important issue that had to do with whether or not we should be considering an amendment that looks primarily like it's a fiscal amendment. And so I just want to repeat for those members just joining us that it's not the desire of this chair to dive into deeply into fiscal issues. However, the Faust Amendment raises on point the question of the new role of authorizers that are part of the framework of this proposal. And so I thought that was a strong enough tie that we would entertain this particular amendment. Representative Griley, then Representative Loom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a hunch when this bill is in K-12 finance, there will be some policy considerations as well. It always gets very confusing when we have separate committees. I just wanted to say that I do not support the Faust Amendment. I usually do support his amendments, but this one, I do think that with the enhanced role per the auditor's recommendation for authorizers, if we take it seriously, then considering that most of them have other missions and other full charges, that they should have, usually if you require something, there should be some money to go along with it. So I think it is a reasonable proposal that can represent Fulcombe's bill.
Thank you. Representative Loom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would ask this of either Representative Slocum or Ms. Beal or Mr. Piccolo, but I do agree with, I think, the proposal and the concept you've come forward with, Representative Slocum, just if we're going to ask the authorizers to do more and to be more responsible, that, that's generally going to cost more. We find that with any school or educational system we're looking at. But I'm wondering if you could put any of this information in context for us with regards to sort of overall administrative costs. My assumption is that these fees would play into the overall cost of administering a charter school. And if you have any figures to compare perhaps a traditional public school district and what percentage overall goes to administration versus what the charter schools are experiencing.
Mr. Piccolo?
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Lewin. This is not a direct administrative cost because it is an outside oversight of the school. It's not the running of the school, but it's the external review of the school and how it's doing. So it's not it's strictly administrative cost in that sense. Charter schools normally have a lower administrative cost than traditional districts. Most of our schools have one administrator. Many of our smaller schools have part-time administrators. So our administrative costs are lower than traditional districts.
Representative Lou.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you have any overall, is there any average percentage overall for charter schools, or is that too difficult to quantify given the differences between individual schools?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewin, I'm not sure that, I do not believe anybody's ever done a strict comparison of that. We have been collecting information the last 2 years now for the first time in terms of administrative salaries and so forth. And they, as I say, they are a small percentage of the operation of schools.
Representative,
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final follow-up. Just a question with regards to board members for the charter schools. Is there any compensation for those individuals serving on the boards?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewin, that has been an issue of controversy in the sense that because under the nonprofit law, a board can establish compensation, but we do not have any boards that do provide compensation. They may provide mileage if they go to a workshop or something and the registration fee, but they do not get a meeting fee for attending board meetings.
Thank you. Representative Newsom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the point that Representative Loon brought up, we did have a study in District 11 on cost. And generally speaking, public schools run 3 to 6% administrative costs. And the study we saw actually showed that charter schools run 5 to 7%. So they were slightly higher on average. And that may be due Mr. Piccolo, to the fact that you might have one administrator, but you've got a very small school.
Representative Depke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I was a few minutes late this morning. Is it fair to say that the additional fee that you're thinking of paying for the authorized, it would be, in a sense, a replacement for paying the school board, or that's in lieu of paying your board members?
Mr. Pickle.
Mr. Chair, Representative. No. The sponsor, as I say, boards don't get paid in charter schools, so this is not replacing a cost. This is a cost outside. This is an external review of the school that is being paid for.
Thank you.
Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize. I didn't write down your name, Madam, from Volunteers of America.
Sure. Katie Peel.
Peel. All right. Sorry about that. I have several comments, I guess, that I'd like to make in response to your comments. First of all, when Volunteers of America decided to start those 15 schools, they knew that within 3 years they were going to be getting $10 per student. And if they're spending $150 and only getting $30 back, you know, I don't have any sympathy for them because they went into it knowing that's what they were going to get. And that was a business decision that they made, and my guess is that they didn't go into that trying to make money off of the deal, at least I'm assuming that. A second point I guess I'd like to make is that I don't believe, and this is just my own opinion, that the negotiations that came up with this language between the charter schools and their authorizers, or the authorizers and the boards, were done at arm's length. I mean, you might argue that they were, but I don't believe they were. The way I see it, I mean, the way I understand the structure between the authorizers and the school boards, it really isn't negotiated at arm's length, and so I guess I don't, you know, trust this language that this is really a true negotiation. And the third point is that, you know, I understand that their role has increased significantly with this language, and I accept that, but I certainly don't believe it's increased by 45 times. And the way I do my math is that it's coming out, it looks to me like we're going to be charging as much as 45 times as much as our current rate. I mean, that's the way it looks to me. And I don't think we're anywhere close to that. And so, I mean, you know, if you had gone through and said, well, we're going to double it to $20, I'd say, wow, I don't like that, but I could live with that. But to increase it by this amount, I think, is just way out of line. And so, I mean, even the example you gave, you're five times as much as what your current rate is. And so even if we had gone to five times, I could say, well, that's even, you know, reasonable. But to go 45 times as much, I don't see how that even makes sense. So so that's why I'm excited about this, and I just think this is irresponsible.
Mr. Piccolo, very quickly, and then we're going to move the vote on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paul, with the minimum and maximum that are put into the language that was just adopted in the technical amendment, the maximum is four pupil units, so 20,000. So it is only six times the current maximum rate that they can be charged.
Representative Gladley, I suspect you'll be hearing a little bit more about this if this bill moves on to the Finance Committee.
If I can quickly, that's not the way
I'm sorry.
I read it as that that it can get up to 45 times what it currently is. So I don't. Maybe there's a difference in the understanding of the language, but that's the way I see it.
Very well. Members, I think we understand the issue here. So we're going to take a vote on this. All in favor of the Faust Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Division.
Division has been called for. All in favor of the Faust Amendment, please raise your hand. Let me see. All opposed, raise your hands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Your ears are working good.
On a vote of 14 to 6 with 14 no's and 6 ayes, the motion does not prevail. Next amendment, Representative Abler, the H-10 amendment.
That's a little one.
It starts out with the little one, Representative.
I know, I've got an oral amendment. Oh, here it is.
This is I've got an oral amendment to the amendment. Staff suggested I improve it.
Why don't you move your amendment?
I'll move the A-10.
Representative Abler moves the A-10 amendment.
And then after the word schools, this is just to modify the intention. Consistent insert after schools on the line 1.5, consistent with school performance report card information under section 120B.36. And I'll give this to staff when I'm...
Representative Abler, why don't you repeat it one more time.
Consistent with school performance report card information under section 120B.36.
So Representative Abler incorporates that into his amendment. Representative Abler.
And this is meant to be helpful to the understanding of what is accomplished by these individual schools, and it's meant to be just a way to compare the charter school performance with the performance of similar populations in the region that they're cited in. And so they could compare whatever their school demographic is with a similar demographic from their area. If we're all about performance and doing well, some of these schools will show that they're doing stellar performances, and some will show that they're average, and some will be below par. And that's what you want to know, not based upon how the school is, if you've carved out a niche. So that's the, I think it's consistent and friendly to the cause, and I hope you adopt it.
Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, my questions, I have a couple of questions about this. One is how you describe, or how would you define legally valid and highly reliable? And we talked about that before. And then also, wouldn't this fall under the responsibility of the Department of Ed to gather that information from a variety of schools? And if it doesn't, would that put the responsibility on the individual school?
Representative Abler.
Well, I think that's the point of working with. And it's meant to be without cost and without any particular burden. The district schools and charter school students are being tested to death. And so it seems like there's enough data coming out of that growth model and all that to compare. The only point is you want to compare similar populations. If you have a disparate population in a charter school, it might look like the school is doing really worse than the host district or the resident district, but in fact they have a much more difficult population, which would be revealed by this. And if they're doing great and they have a relatively easier population, that would be something that they would want to know themselves, and why are you not achieving higher goals. But that's the point of it, and it's meant to be without any particular cost, maybe slight effort, but I think the rewards would be high. And so, and I'm willing to work with you along the way if you like the idea of it.
Representative Fulton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, I have no problem philosophically with this. In fact, I would like to see charters that are succeeding using different methodologies share their methodologies with traditional districts and with other charters. Share the good news.
Commissioner Brown.
Mr. Chair, Morgan Brown with the department. The department really understands and respects the intent of Representative Abler's amendment. I guess just two things to raise. One is whether this burden or this responsibility should be put on the individual school, which it would by adding it under state and local requirements. And what we'd like to try to work out is something that doesn't necessarily put that on the individual school and also doesn't duplicate what the department already provides, which is if you go to the state report card website, you can use the analysis tool to do these kind of comparisons. So maybe we can work something out that builds on what the department already has, but make sure the schools are engaged in that and involved in that.
Mr. Chair, it's not meant to be duplicative or anything extra, but I think that, you know, I don't know that this goes on now, and one of the biggest criticisms of charters is, especially some of the ones that have low results, are actually high results for that population. And so that's the point of trying to use this. So maybe it could be a placeholder, and this still has a long ways to go. So, and I'll work with all of them.
Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I have no problem.
Any further discussion? Representative Ryder.
Mr. Chair, I hesitate because the author has agreed to the amendment, but I do have concerns that the department has echoed. I really think this is something that has to be in partnership with the department, because schools and school districts really aren't equipped to do this, and the data is available on the report card now, and so the partnership ought to be with the department, I think, rather than districts and other charter schools, if you really want to have reliable and valid data.
And Representative Brainerd, if we take this as a placeholder, and this is a policy committee, at least the theme and the desire is to have the information. If it's already available, then it can just be deleted in finance. But I I don't think that this emphasis is done. So, and I'll, you can help me.
Representative Abler, I echo Representative Reiner's concerns. I like the general thrust. I had a question about, you know, the mandate to make available to the public. I do think it is important to be working collaboratively through the department, that's sort of the function of the department, but I'm hearing a desire on your part to modify the language if the amendment is successful.
Mr. Chair, I just have a thought of an oral amendment I wanted to offer to my the angel popped in here, and on line 1.3, I think it'd just be a great idea to strike other charter schools and school districts and insert the department, which I think maybe gets us on the way in. So,
so Representative Abler moves. Can we do this? Can we do an amendment to an amendment here?
Well, it's an oral amendment. I'll incorporate that into my amendment.
So Representative Abler greatly alters his amendment with another oral amendment.
You know, it's not much the way it was. Sorry, man.
And Ms. Fleischer, could you just read the language for us?
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Abler is moving to further amend his A-10 amendment as follows. On page 1, line 3, delete other charter schools, and on page 1, line 4, delete school districts and insert the department. So that with the two amendments to Representative Abler's A-10 amendment, the amendment in its entirety should now read, and must work with the department to make available to the public valid and highly reliable comparisons of student academic growth and achievement across school districts consistent with school report card information under section 120B.36.
Representative Abler incorporates that into his amendment.
It's a much better amendment now, Mr. Chair.
It's a much different amendment. Members, we're all clear about the amendment. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Abler. You have another amendment.
I do. Anyway, I'd like to make an oral amendment to this just to delete some parts here. It's just way too long. Oh, we're on the A-11 amendment. I moved the A-11, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler moves the A-11 amendment.
And I've had the privilege of talking to Ms. Peel and Mr. Piccolo and actually a cast of many who have stopped in to chat about these amendments. And I'd line 121, even though I like it, it seems like that's some kind of a, they're trying to open up space to sectarian facilities, and there's nervousness about putting those in churches, and I don't have the same problem with that. But I'd like to leave 121, which will keep the bill as it is. And then lines 124 to 127, leaves that, and I'll delete those orally if I can incorporate those.
Very well. Representative Abler incorporates into his A-11 amendment, deleting lines 121 and lines 124 through 127. Amendment is before us.
Mr. Chair, there is still a hole in the bill, so that the acronym 124 to 127 attempted to address, which is, what happens if a charter, if an authorizer just decides they're done being an authorizer, or if the charter school is, less if the charter school is sick of their authorizer, but if there's no notice in law for an authorizer to give them any reasonable notice at all that they're done now. And so that's the problem for another day. I tried to address it here, but it's not to be solved in this matter, and maybe it comes up along the way. On the other, there's a couple different parts. Some are really minor and some are significant. There's a matter of the dialogue between the department and either the authorizer or the school. And there's three dates that are in here. Line 1.3 and 1.4 is a cluster. Line 1.5 to 1.8 is a cluster. And 1.12 to 1.15 is a cluster. And it's the same theme. Having been through this on both sides of it, we started with one school board member liking us and got six because we went back and forth. I talked to Sharon Peck at the department a dozen times. Back in 1993 and 94, changing our format along the way, learning what we could and couldn't do. And you want that to go on yet. Although the movement has matured, so you have much more sophisticated people than me setting up these charter schools and trying to get them off the ground. Still, you need a little chance for dialogue, and there's still a lot of uncertainty about what you can and can't do. Can you have this feature to your school? And so what these three amendments would do, that both if you're an authorizer of your own good heart wanting to take a loss or in a business model to serve these schools, if you make a proposal, the department has a time certain to respond in the bill, which I think is good because they that gives them the knowledge that they're going to get a response. But in the cases of times that are there, there's 20 business days or 30 business days, which is a month or a month and a half, that they have to respond by. And in practical terms, that's not reasonable to bind the seeker of approval to a time certain, because they may be a board, the corporation only meets every quarter, they may have to talk to people, work out stuff. It's not just one or two people doing it like it was less than 1993, it's a whole group of people, and they may have to work through the grieving process, they can't do something. And so if they don't respond in time, they're dead anyway. And so if they have to rework their whole plan to get permission, you don't want to have them go to a single response and then the commissioner's decision is final because it's not perfect in all 14 issues. You solved only 13 of them. And this allows for a dialogue, and that's what that's the purpose of those three different dates. On 1.3 and 4 has to do with the sponsor authorizer doing their authorization plan, and they can go back and forth. There's some very good sponsors who you'd want to have who need some time to work through the bugs. And the other, but the department is forbidden under the language more past 20 days to in one shot. And in the same way, the second part has to do with your initial application as a school, and the third cluster has to do with an affidavit of expanding or changing your program. And so I think if we dissected, that would be a good topic, and maybe I should even offer to divide the amendment to have those three sessions included as my division, and then the other ones are more technical, Mr. Chair. So I think I'd move to divide my amendment to include 1.3 to 1.8 and 1.12 to 1.15, and let the... and the word opportunity is a problem. I know Mr. Piccolo thought of a word. My intention here, and we can work on it, is to let it be an open-ended opportunity on the part of the supplicant to have a chance to respond. And the word opportunity might be construed as 2 days, which is the fear of the MAX group. But it's my intention that they have all the time they need to, it might take a year to go rework it, but at least that way their application is still open, it's still on a file somewhere. And so along the way, if they don't have an answer now, that word will suffice unless they can see a better answer. But that's my intent in the word opportunity.
Representative Abler moves to divide his amendment. Representative Abler, tell us where your division is and which one you wish to vote on first.
Yeah, and 1.3 to 1.8 would be, and 1.12 to 1.15 are the, there's actually three different dates there.
So yeah, so which first?
Well, no, I would divide it to take those two portions.
I'm sorry.
I'd like to. Those are. There's two parts that I'd like to. They're all the same topic.
I see. Okay, so Representative Abel, you want us to vote on 1.3 to 1.8 and 1.12 through 1.15
right.
as one amendment,
right.
The First Amendment. Members. Welcome, Mr. Commissioner Brown.
Mr. Chairman, the department, I guess we'd like to state a concern here, which is in terms of managing the application procedures, it is important that there be some timelines. And if Representative Abler feels that the current timelines for the applicant to respond are not sufficient, then maybe we can discuss what would be sufficient. But I think our concern here is having it open-ended. Once the commissioner makes the decision to deny the application or affidavit open-ended, does that mean that 2 years down the road, this same entity could come? And what we often find, even under the current situation, is when they come back, sometimes it's a whole different set of developers. It's been a lot of turnover. And so you really have to go back and look at the full application again. And what we're really looking for here, as I understand the current language, is an opportunity when the commissioner makes a denial for the applicant to very quickly make its case about why it feels that it should have been approved or address the reasons for the denial so the commissioner can quickly revisit that decision and make either overturn that decision kind of on appeal or say, no, I'm sticking with the final decision. And it just makes it very unmanageable for us if it kind of stretches out for an extended period. And as I read the language, and I think this was all our understanding when it was drafted, just because you're denied one time, you know, the department will have application rounds and cycles. Doesn't mean you couldn't ever come back with a new application. It just means it would have to be a new application. You couldn't just come back and saying, no, I'm kind of revisiting that old application that I submitted a year ago on appeal.
Thank you. Members, we have 45 minutes. We have four or five amendments left. One or two of them are pretty significant. There may be individuals in the audience that want to testify on the bill. I would like us to act on this bill before by 10 o'clock. Otherwise, we're back here at 6 p.m. to act on the bill. Representative Slocum, do you have a position on the first part of the Abler Amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I would be happy to work with you on this and see if we can't make it more open-ended, but I do know that the charter organization also wants some turnaround dates so the things don't drift as they can.
Representative Abler, you get the last word, and I want us to roll.
Well, this is... It's meant to help you all, and I'm nervous you're accepting a deal that's bad for you. This has got a long ways to go, so I can simply withdraw it, and you can work with me on that.
Representative Abler withdraws the first part of the amendment. Representative Abler, the second part of the amendment, which would be...
I'm just here as a policy wonk, Mr. Chair. The other parts of the amendment are a little more vanilla. Line 1 point, and these are all just... I've lived through it, and I don't want you to have to repeat our trouble kind of amendments, you know. And the 1.9 talks about that has to do with publishing. My notes just occurred to my folder, Mr. Chair, so I'm a little goofy here. This just says to put it on the web, that it should make available on its website instead of waiting for a request. That's kind of petty. It's in the order of what Representative Dabney did. Page 6, it says that a charter board member only has to do the training one time or more if the board demands it. At least they could get away with only one time. It's not clear they have to repeat the training. And then line 116 to 1.20 was in the area that Representative Dabney worked on. I think it even cleans it up some more. The way it reads, and maybe Representative Dabney can comment on that, the way it reads to me is that you have to have these huge pile of papers you got to pass out to every interested party, and this would only make the papers go to people who actually want one. And if this were adopted, you probably would delete the Dabney Amendment, which also talks about the web, which is his point. And then the other, and then the most important one here is on page 16, having to do with these building corporations. If you're going to make the commissioner approve everything else, they should certainly approve the affidavit that the building corporation submits. The future is going to be everybody's going to have a building corporation. I'm going to tell you right now. Every charter school worth its salt is going to have a corporation. All you have to do is send in a thing. We're having one. And I think that the commissioner should be allowed to approve that. So there's some that should not have a building corporation, and as many as ought to. It's up to the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Slocum.
Representative Abler, Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I believe that's in the bill, that the commissioner has final approval for...
Mr. Piccolo, quickly, please.
No, they don't.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, on page 16, 5, 4, and 5 in the bill, the school is prohibited from organizing the nonprofit building company until the authorizer files a supplemented affidavit with the commissioner. Currently, there... charter schools can create a building company without anybody's approval.
Right.
Their sponsor, the department, anybody. So we're putting something in here that the authorizer has to approve it and then file a submission to the department.
Representative Cass.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question I have is a charter school mandated to have an official website?
Mr. Pickle.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe they are.
Is that the problem that I have then with this, is that that the charter school must make these minutes and everything approved? Well, if they don't have a website, then there would not be any access for anybody, and so this would be a loophole for them.
Members, want us to vote on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, there's an important
point. Very quickly.
Yeah, but this last point, I mean, I don't care. The website, who cares about it? This is a minor. This last point is key. The single fastest growing education line item on the budget is lease aid. And just to tell you, as a friend and as a pragmatist to the movement, it says on line 115.5, you have to file an affidavit. There's no approval. And maybe I'll divide the amendment to just have that, and I don't care about the website stuff. And I don't want to burn up the time, but this is a really important piece. And the commissioner, and so you file your taxes.
Representative Abler,
do you want me to divide, or do you want to just...
Yes, and the chair is exhibiting great patience here. Members, on these amendments, they're probably a lot easier to take them individual item by item. Otherwise, We're in essence working off of kind of an omnibus amendment here, and it makes it very. I know you're being trying to be diligent, cover a lot of ground here, but it does make it difficult to track, and most likely will result in the defeat of good amendments or amendments that have good provisions because members have issues with other provisions. So, Representative Abler, please help me out here very quickly.
Well, this is the most important one, and
you're
going to
choose to divide.
Let's just do line 1.22 and 1.23, and you can just vote on it.
Members, all in favor of the Abler amendments, Representative Abler moves to divide the amendments further, and the motion before us is to vote on lines 1.22 to 1.23. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Abler, the rest of your amendment?
You can just vote.
So, Representative Abler, we now have 1.9 through 1.11 and 1.16 through 1.20 before. Is that correct?
You're a very patient.
Thank you, Representative Abler. All in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Growley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see. After all this, I would move the A-19 amendment.
Representative Grimey moves the A-19. Oh, wait a minute. The A-14 amendment, Representative Grimey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A-14. And then I have an amendment to the amendment.
You guys are hanging out in the same coffee shop.
But Mr. Chair, I carefully made my amendment to the amendment separate so it could
be
clear what I'm doing. Some people may have seen the original amendment A-14 earlier, but now I would move A-27, an amendment to the A-14 amendment.
Okay, Representative Grimey, I'm told we first need to adopt the A-14 amendment, then we can amend that.
All right.
I think that's right. Yeah. Unless you wish to incorporate the A-27 within the A-14.
That would be fine, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grimey moves the A-14 amendment and further incorporates the A-27 amendment into the A-14 amendment, so we now have one cohesive amendment. Representative Grimey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The purpose of this amendment is to clarify that charter schools are following the separation of church and state principle, as other schools do. And so I know that the charter schools and Representative Slocum had not allowing house of worship in the original bill, but working with others, including the American Civil Liberties Union, the preferable language, we believe, would be non-public sectarian or religious institution rather than house of worship. And then it also is having this section be prospective. Henceforth, I did not want to close down on any current schools that are operating. It would have been desirable to have this language in there first, but as long as there are schools that are operating and operating successfully, I have the section only applying to new charter schools, and the language in the A-27 amendment is language that we worked on, including with Mr. Piccolo, to clarify that current schools could operate henceforth. It was pointed out to me with my original amendment that schools, because they had to reapply to be to have authorizers under this bill, that we needed the language of A-27 to clarify that it did not close off any existing schools. So that, Mr. Chair, is the intent of this amendment.
Very well. And members, again, just so you're technically following, the two amendments. And Ms. Larson, you can help me if I'm wrong about this. If you're looking at the A-14 amendment, you would be striking language on line 1.12 after the word act, and then striking the language on line 113 and 114, and then inserting the language from the A-27 amendment beginning on line 1.5. Representative Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just could read Mr. Piccolo's lips, and he advised me, and I want to clarify what I said. This is for authorizers, not schools. It's to continue with current authorizers.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah. Representative Slocum or Mr. Piccolo?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I would accept this amendment. I think it helps clarify.
Representative Dammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I am confused. And that's happened before. My understanding is A27 is amending A14.
That's correct.
And it's incorporated. A27 refers to page 1, line 15 of A14. There is no line 15 in A14. Did I miss something?
You're correct. It should be line 14.
Okay, so the 1.5 of A27 should be page 1, line 14?
That's correct.
Okay. I probably should have seen that, but thank you.
Good catch. Further discussion? If not, all in favor of the A14 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Norton.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd move the A19 amendment.
So Norton moves the A19 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I realize this is going to cause some controversy, but I have concerns that we are putting state tax dollars into sectarian organizations in an ongoing way for profit, and I've received a number of emails, as someone must have shared, that the A19 was my amendment. And so I received a number of emails yesterday, and in fact, one of them was concerned that my amendment would unnecessarily discriminate against churches who wish to make their surplus school facilities available to charters. And I would just like to say that this does no such thing. They're more than welcome to donate the school, as far as I know, which is what we've done in Rochester with our public schools on occasion to other governmental entities or the United Way nonprofits. So I do not think it does that, but it would disallow them from being able to have ongoing state tax dollars be funneled into sectarian use, which is what I'm one of the things that I'm hoping to halt with this particular amendment. And if I could just share one more thought. In the disappointment, I appreciate receiving emails from people, but I did not appreciate receiving the comment that my amendment would be a de facto absolute monopoly for public school systems with all the dysfunction that monopolies engender. I did not appreciate getting that one, because that is not at all what we're doing. We have an excellent public school system in this state. There was also an implication that our public schools don't have great communication with our local parents and communities, and I would also object to that charter schools or private schools do not have a monopoly on excellent communication relationships between their schools, their communities, their parents, and their children.
Representative Norton, I saw the email, and I shared your sentiment. I had the exact same feeling. I don't think it helps public debate to characterize either charter schools or public traditional schools in that manner.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And just for the record, Mr. Chair and members, I was born into a Catholic family. I was raised, my elementary education was in a Catholic school. I am not opposed to private schools, and in fact support their right to function, and my parents supported them. So this is not about whether private schools are valuable or provide excellent educations or opportunities for people in our community. This is about state tax dollars in the form of charter schools being used in a sectarian manner. And I will say there's an interesting article that was passed me in the New York Times about plan to turn Catholic schools into charters, and it's rather interesting. If any of you are wanting to get a copy and look at this, it does say one of the reasons we're doing this, and one of the emails I received was from a Catholic school in my community who was very upset that we might approve this amendment. The reason is because they have built themselves a new school, will have an empty school, and had planned on the state tax dollars for charter school leasing to fund, you know, fill a financial hole for them. And so I do understand how this has come about. I just don't think that should be the state's role. So I just forward the AE-19 for your consideration, and I guess that's it.
Representative Slocum. Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair and Representative Norton, I would oppose this amendment, and I'm going to have Morgan Brown from the department give you the reason.
Commissioner Brown.
Mr. Chairman, the department opposes this amendment, and there's several concerns that we have. We currently have 43 charter schools that lease from sectarian organizations, and this amendment, depending on when their leases are up, which in many cases would be within the next couple of years, 1 to 5 years, would have the effect of displacing all of them from their current locations. There's a couple concerns related to that, and because a lot of, particularly in the metro area and in the core cities, this might have the effect of displacing them out of the neighborhoods and communities of students where they currently serve if they couldn't find another appropriate educational space, which obviously creates problems and also increased costs in terms of transportation. The other, in a rural town where you have charter schools leasing this type of facility, they may not be able to find another appropriate educational facility in that town, or not a facility that's ready for classroom space. There's a potential for higher lease costs here, because again, having to go into spaces that are not ready to go in terms of educational spaces or classrooms that would need modifications. And then I just want to reiterate, when this was allowed for, I think part of the understanding was that we had these buildings in our communities that were set up to provide education. They were education buildings, and rather than have them sit there vacant and have charter schools go to other spaces and that money be spent converting those into educational space, why not use the space that was already set up for educational purposes? And finally, I do want to note, and I can provoke, we have to go back and do a little more research, but I'd be happy to provide the committee, but school districts do currently lease space from non-sectarian organizations for a variety of reasons. Probably the most common one is graduation ceremonies, but there are other situations where it's outside, where it is related to early childhood. And so I guess I just ask that if we're going to do this, will we be consistent and not allow school districts to lease from non-sectarian organizations, allow them to do it, but not allow charter schools to do it?
Representative Benson, Representative Reiner, Representative Cass, Representative Norton, you want to respond quickly first?
Well, I did, and I would offer just an oral amendment that might fix part of the issue. And if we change supplies to does not apply and change on line 19 and change line 110, change the word after to before, then it would not be retroactive to the schools that are currently leasing.
Very well. Members, we have a oral amendment. I'm wondering if maybe we can
just incorporate.
Yeah, we can do that by incorporation. Then let's repeat the oral amendment again.
On line 1.9, the term applies would change to does not apply. On line 110, the word after would change to before.
Members, do you have that? So especially Representative Norton is, as I understand it, then basically grandfathering an existing lease arrangements here.
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner Brown.
Maybe I misunderstand the amendment, but I don't think this solves the problem. All it does is say it won't invalidate current leases, which obviously would be problematic anyway. But what it still says is that a charter school that has that lease renewed, which again is going to only be a couple of years out from these charter schools because they're on 3-year contract cycles, they would have to leave that space. They couldn't renew a lease there. And so all of the concerns that I brought up would still be in place.
We have several members here. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question I had may have already been answered by Commissioner Brown, but I just wanted him to clarify it again for me. Is it not true that there is leasing going on in non-sectarian spaces already?
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you mean sectarian spaces already?
Yes.
Yes, we have 43 schools, that charter schools, that are currently leasing from sectarian organizations.
And do any of these charter... Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Brown, and does any of these leases also involve leasing a space from non-sectarian entities?
Commissioner Brown.
I looked at my colleagues here, but I believe there are examples where charter schools are leasing from both sectarian and non-sectarian for various reasons.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Pickle, quickly.
All the other charter schools lease from non-sectarian organizations, whether they're public institutions. We have, for example, a school in St. Paul that leases from Parks and Rec Department of the City of St. Paul. We have a school in Minneapolis that leases from Minneapolis Housing Authority, or whatever, I don't remember the exact name. And most charter schools are in private owned property, owned by for-profit companies.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may just follow. So I'd like to ask the author of this amendment, do you object to the leasing and paying of leases to non-sectarian entities, or is it just sectarian entities you have a problem with?
Representative Norton.
My intent with this amendment was to deal only with sectarian entities.
Representative Demmer. I'm sorry, I went out of order here. Representative Briner, then Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brown has already alluded to the situation, but my own public school district, which I served on the board for 12 years, does rent sectarian space. We have a research and development site, which could have been a charter school, but it's not. It's a district site. And we use space that was vacated by a church school because they just didn't have the population to use it. And for all the reasons already stated, the space was ideal. It took less development than going to a new site. And I would hate to see the district lose that site, and I think we do need to be fair if what applies to charters ought to apply to public schools in general. So because of that, I would oppose this amendment, or at the very least say that this issue is of such weight that I don't think it should be an amendment to a bill. It should be a bill in its own right and warrant quite a bit of additional discussion.
Thank you. Representative Demmer. Representative Demmer passes. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for Mr. Brown. Out of the 45 schools that are currently doing this, how many of them are actually renting the space from their authorizer, so that the sectarian organization is also the authorizer?
Commissioner Brown.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think we will need to get back to you on that, but my recollection from looking at the list is it's very few. And just to add a point of clarification, most of these sectarian organizations are either individual churches, which are not in any way connected to the authorizer, and then we have about four or five cases where it's the local YMCA, which is classified as a sectarian organization, so they also show up on the list.
Members, I think we understand the amendments. We've heard good arguments forward and backwards on this. I want to take a vote on this. We have another big amendment today. I think it requires some time.
Sorry, clarification, Mr. Chairman.
There's a clarification. I'm sorry, Mr. Pickle.
Mr. Chair, Ripensdorf, there are no schools that lease from a sectarian organization that are sponsored by a sectarian organization because they cannot be sponsored. So there are none.
Very well. Members, we have the amendment before us. Representative Norton's Bay 19 amendment with the oral incorporation. All in favor of the A19 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Norton. Actually, it's a good debate to have. It's important that we attempt to talk through these issues with a little bit more time than normally happens on the House floor. That's a whole different universe when we try to talk about these issues. Members, we have the A0072 amendment, Representative Obermuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is an amendment to Representative Peterson's amendment from yesterday, which I voted against, but I thought might be able to be corrected, changed so that I could support the concepts that were in there. This amendment, just for help with clarification in your packet, there's also an amendment coded A26, which I can't, is not going to be offered, but it basically shows what the Peterson amendment would look like if my 0072 was adopted. And basically what it does is to take out the provisions relating to relocating a charter school into the boundaries of a public school site where a local public school has been closed. The concerns I have with the way it was, with the current law would read now as it was amended yesterday, is that there might be reasons why a school board would want to close a local elementary school, for example, but allow a charter school to go in there. And so this actually would help to give them that right. I'm also very concerned about the one-mile radius, given as we look forward to school districts in Minneapolis and St. Paul having to do this, and there could be multiple schools within a one-mile radius in some of those cities. We're not going to see it in my district in Eagan, probably, because of the spread out, but we might see it some need for that in some other districts. And so that's what this amendment basically does. I'm happy to answer any questions I can.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would oppose this amendment. I think that the language we had was very clear. And, you know, this really is a policy issue about money. We talked a bit about policy yesterday. This really is talking about who pays for the schools. You know, the district is closing schools because they don't have money. The school district doesn't have enough money. Even in my district, they ran a referendum. It failed. They ran one. It passed. But even with that, they had to close schools to save $2 million because they don't have the resources. And so with that, as they close it, you have the possibility then of a charter school either relocating close to the school or within that school. And then the state picks up the cost. So the taxpayers are actually paying then for the new school, the charter school, to come in instead of the local having the resources. You know, that just seems a little backward to me. We have to decide, is the state going to pay for all of the schools? Maybe they should. Startup aid, lease aid, and then the per pupil to every school, and then we would have an equal playing field. But when a district has to close schools for lack of funds, they need some time and the discretion, and I think for 36 months, to make that decision. Now, in greater Minnesota, it could be consolidation, dissolution. In the metro area, it is usually the closing of a school. And we need to have that time, and this gives the local school board the right to make a decision about what fits for them. And indeed, as I said yesterday, they might actually decide maybe they ought to open a charter school of their own or be an authorizer so they could get those resources and the funding needed to keep that school open in some unique way. Now, if I thought that the legislative auditor's report really showed that the school coming in had, you know, was unique and had better results, you know, that might be a reason for a school district to accept them. But as we heard from the legislative auditor, if you do apples for apples, the achievement level is not as good in the charter schools. And there are a few, and I know of a few, who do have unique programs and ought to be replicated. But in most instances, those programs are not unique, but simply are able to move into a district because they get state aid and the district doesn't have the resources. So I'm really opposing this amendment and A26, if that's it, because I think the amendment that approved yesterday, A15, really spells out what will happen in those districts that have to go through this very, very painful process. And so I would oppose both amendments.
Representative Norton.
I would like to support Representative Peterson's recent comments and ask you to oppose the A72 that's before us and the A26 if it were to be offered. I would say if you will look on line 1.6 of the 72 amendment, it deletes sections, those little three I's and the two I's. And in doing so and inserting this other language, it is in essence saying the boundaries of a dissolved school district. We're not dissolving school districts. We are dissolving a particular school. So it completely changes the idea of a school district that is forced to close a school because of funding or lack of being able to keep, you know, repair the building or whatever reason. And so it's changing the entire intent of Representative Peterson's amendment yesterday. So I would ask you to, despite the good attempt at improving the amendment, I would ask you to reject the 72 and leave the Peterson amendment from yesterday in place.
Thank you. And members, just I'm hearing whisperings and questions here. Just to clarify, the 826 amendment is not in play. It's the 0072 amendment. The 826 amendment was drafted as sort of an aid for members to see what the impact of the 0072 amendment would have on the amendment that was the Peterson amendment that was adopted yesterday. And so it would, the Peterson amendment adopted yesterday would look like this language in the 826 if we adopt the 0072 amendment. So I just want to clarify that. Representative Dowdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question first, and I'm not sure who can answer it. We heard about the number of charter schools that have actually been located in sectarian facilities. Do you know how many charter schools have actually been located in formerly traditional public school district facilities?
Mr. Piccolo, or excuse me, Representative Falcon, very quickly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, no, I don't know that, because in some districts they've had policies that will not allow charter schools to lease to the district to lease the charter schools.
Thank you. If I could, I'm
Representative Downey.
Speaking strong support of the Overmuller Amendment, I signed on to the Slocum Bill as a co-author. I frankly, from a personal district standpoint, don't have a dog in the fight. We don't have any charter schools in my district, but I saw the Slocum Bill as a really good faith attempt, a bipartisan good faith attempt to enact some legitimate reforms that would improve charter schools in Minnesota. We were nation leading when we implemented charter schools. I would want us to continue to be nation leading with our charter schools, and I'll be honest, I think the stakes are a little bit higher as I start to hear some of the amendments coming forward. I don't know what the number of charter schools in public school buildings is, but had we enacted the Norton Amendment, or if we stick with the Peterson Amendment, I could see us effectively, had these amendments been in place 10 years ago, shutting down a significant percentage of the charter schools that already exist. I really think we as a state want to be a state that innovates, that reforms, that provides that kind of freedom and flexibility. And frankly, if I were a parent of kids in a neighborhood in Minneapolis where my school was failing my kids year after year, and then to have that school shut down and have no ability as a parent to organize with my neighbors and other parents to form a school that would serve my kids and educate them, I'd be outraged. So I want to speak really strongly on behalf of the Obermuller Amendment. I think the stakes are much higher here than simply a tweak to the bill. I think this is, in fact, in many ways, a bit of a statement about whether we as Minnesotans are going to support charter schools or try and put a cap on them. And if I could, I'd like to ask for a roll call on the Obermuller Amendment.
Yeah, Representative Downey requests a roll call. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank whomever for the 826 amendment. It's a lot easier to understand what the impact would be when we're working off of the DE5 with the amendments. It isn't reflected in there, and so I appreciate it. I, too, want to speak in opposition to the Obermuller Amendment a couple of different ways. First of all, I want to correct what I think is a misimpression that in Representative Obermuller's presentation, the Peterson Amendment allows school districts to rent to charter schools. Mm-hmm. My school district is doing exactly that, but with a performance dimension to the lease. So it's not simply we need the revenue or we want the revenue so we'll lease an empty building. It's these are our community's kids. Let's work together. Let's have some expectations for performance and focus on the kids. And if you go back to the OLA's report, there's a number of schools, both traditional public and charter, that have 100% mobility rates, mm-hmm. where you start the year with 30 kids in the classroom and you end the year with 30 kids in the classroom, but none of the kids who were there at the beginning of the year are there at the end of the year. And they're bouncing back and forth between charter and traditional public. What the Peterson Amendment does is start to put a framework in place for ending the war and focusing instead on the kids. Because I think what we inadvertently did as a state 20 years ago when we established the first charter schools is the competition was intended to be a positive. It was intended to drive innovation. But the way it was structured instead has the parents, or has the adults in the picture fight, and the kids get lost. I'm reminded of the African proverb that when the elephants fight, the grass gets trampled. And I think that's where we've gotten ourselves on a policy level. I'm increasingly seeing on the ground folks can work together. Minneapolis is co-locating charter schools into our existing public schools. Dunwoody Institute's charter school will be moving into North High School, and the two programs will operate side by side. That's for the good of the kids. It doesn't reflect the boxing gloves that we've put on both sides in a policy framework. The Peterson Amendment gets people talking. Representative Downey, my daughter goes to Minneapolis Public School that is over a mile from our house. It's considered close to our house. The 1 mile radius in the urban area is not a considerable limit whatsoever. The Obermuller Amendment, as written now, applies only to consolidated school districts in Representative Cass and other areas in greater Minnesota, and essentially cut the hole in the state for the entire metro area. Let's get folks working together for the kids rather than fighting each other out. I'd ask for a no vote on the Obermuller Amendment.
Members, we have 6 minutes before we're scheduled to adjourn. We are scheduled to recess if we're not able to get through this bill and reconvene at 6 p.m. Tonight, I'm told that Ways and Means and Finance Committees are both meeting this evening. Representative Benson and Representative Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real quickly, I just want to, because I've been gone for much of this, I'd just like to hear Representative Slocum's response to this discussion of the Obermuller Amendment or her presenter, please.
Very quickly, Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, who I'm delighted to see back at the table, I support the Obermuller Amendment.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. I oppose the Obermuller Amendment, and I just wanted to comment on Representative Downey's discussion about a closed school and how you might feel as a parent. And I would say, having been a board member, closing a school is rarely due to the school's failure. It generally has to do with boundary and membership issues in your own school district. And boundary issues are very difficult neighborhood issues, and it's not constructive when a charter discussion becomes an opposition to boundary changes in a district discussion as opposed to a discussion that does focus on the well-being of students.
Representative Griley.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I pass.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I'm looking at the changes in this, I'm looking at we're only talking about school districts and not about individual schools. Am I reading that right?
Representative Obermuller.
Mr. Chair, the first provision that's being struck out talks regarding public school sites as opposed to public school districts. And so I think it does, the portion of striking out would be dealing with individual schools.
Representative Downey.
Just one final quick response. Unless I'm misunderstanding the Peterson Amendment and these changes, essentially the amendment provides school districts 100% absolute veto power over the freedom of individual families and associations to form a charter school within the 1 mile radius of the school that was closed for whatever reason. In my mind, that's a pretty one-sided conversation, and I would not want to inhibit the freedom of parents and associations to form charter schools, and I think we need to just kind of face plain and simple the issue at stake here, and that's do we have the freedom to form charter schools in Minnesota? Thank you.
And Representative Downey, that's further qualified within the 36-month period of time. Representative Cass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to echo that within the 36 months. And what this is it's to say that individuals should not be reacting on emotion and saying that we need to set up a charter school, but to give time to take a look at what is best practice for kids. And that's what that 36 months can do, is it can give some time to say what is best practice for kids when it comes to forming a charter school, having the public school as a part of the conversation, to make sure that the actions that are being taken place are what's going to be best in the long term for the school district, for those kids, and for the charter schools that would like to locate within that area.
Mr. Peterson, I believe you get the last word on this. Quickly.
I should have had an amendment that said that the resources should, that told them if they class to close a state, that they are a school, that the state resources should just flow to that local school to be able to allow them to stay open. But and the parents in that community would love it. They don't, they just want their school. They don't care if it's a charter school or whatever. They just want their school open. And so I do think this is a financial policy that this whole policy committee at some point needs to deal with. But anyway, with that, I would oppose the amendment.
Members, I think we're informed enough to vote at this point, and obviously the clock is also breathing down our neck here. This is a very difficult issue. It seems to the chair that there are indeed two legitimate competing realities here, and perhaps the issue has more to do with, is there a different way, perhaps, to skin this issue than any of the proposals that are before us? But nonetheless, we do have the Obermueller amendment before us. And so with that, there is a roll call that's been called for. The clerk will take the roll.
Mariani.
Aye.
Riley.
No.
Cass.
No.
Abler.
Yes.
Benson.
No.
Reinert.
No.
Dabney.
No.
Demmer.
No.
Dietrich.
Yes.
Jepsy.
No.
Downey.
Yes.
Faust.
No.
Loon.
Yes.
McFarlane.
I'll wait.
Okay. Murdoch.
No.
Newton.
Aye.
Norna.
Yes.
Norton.
No.
Obermueller.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Flowers.
No.
Swales.
Yes.
McFarlane.
Yes.
On a vote of 10 in favor and 12 opposed, the motion does not prevail. Members, we have the A16 amendment, but we're not going to offer that today. We conferred with our finance chair and with the author of the bill or the amendment, and we agreed that that's an amendment more appropriately dealt with in the finance committee if the bill moves forward to finance. Representative Slocum, I'd like us to take a vote on the bill at this point. Do you have any last thoughts and comments and advice to the committee?
Mr. Chair, I do have a few last comments that I will keep brief given the time constraints. This represents a lot of compromise and months of work. It clarifies charter law. It addresses the auditor's report point by point, and you may recall that the auditor said they loved the language, that it really did the job. I would urge you to support this bill. It's good policy. It represents good government. Charter schools aren't going away. Therefore, wouldn't it make some sense to make them more responsive and more responsible and better in our communities? And there are some schools that exist today that are doing phenomenal things with kids, and I'd like to see those good practices shared with everyone who teaches. Please vote for the bill. It's good policy.
Very well. I did neglect to, because the clock is ticking, but I did neglect to ask if there's anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill. Before warned, though, we're past our time, and your words might be... But I do need to offer that. And this bill, if it continues, will certainly continue to face public scrutiny in a subsequent committee. If not, then, Representative Slocum, thank you for the work that you've put into this over the course of the last 4 months, I believe. You held public hearings. You've worked awfully hard on this. Our staff, Christina and Celeste, also were there with you. We thank them and Ms. Larson. Extraordinary amount of work. I want to thank all the collaboration that's happened between the department, the advocacy groups, both in, well, the various advocacy groups, And obviously, I'm reminded that there's no such thing as easy legislation in any legislature, but that's the way it is. I mean, we've come from diverse perspectives, and so we'll have a clash and mixing of ideas, and I hope this bill does go forward and that we eventually are successful in reforming the oversight and accountability processes of our charter schools. With that, Representative Abley renews his motion that House File 935 be recommended to pass as amended, and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Members, until tomorrow, this committee stands adjourned.